It's the Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community by the community. You can find us online at neverwinternightspodcast.com. And now, on to the show.
Well, we continue our game coverage at the 2014 Gen Con Game Fair with, legendary. I don't know if there's a level beyond legendary, is there, that I'm aware of?
Just Shane.
Shane. I was going to say Shane. Stay Shane. We're joining with Shane Hensley once again. Thanks for coming on the show again.
Good to see
you too, buddy.
Well, it's been a year. I don't know if you can, if anybody can believe this. It's been a year since the last time we talked. I mean, within this venue.
And I look no older.
We froze time. It cost time stop, and that's what it is.
Excellent.
And, you know, what have you been doing since last year? I know you've got a lot of stuff going on. We're going to get into it, but this one, I love.
Wow. So, I left video games for a while, and I've gone back into tabletop. And we're Savage Worlds, and the Pinnacle stuff we do has just been exploding. We're doing all kinds of stuff for it. We put out a flyer here at Gen Con where we announced a lot of the stuff we're doing. We had Deadlands Noir out last year. We're doing a Deadlands Noir card game. We're doing a couple of licenses. We're doing Lankmar. I used to work on Lankmar for TSR back in the D&D days. Loved it. We're doing the Sixth Gun RPG, which is kind of weird that we're doing another weird Western after Deadlands. But we love it. And we also thought, well, who better to do a weird Western than us? And then we have our big new sci-fi game coming out, The Last Parsec. That's going to be, we'll talk about Kickstarters, I'll tell you about that.
Awesome.
And we just released a PDF, and the print copies are coming, East Texas University, which is 12 to Midnight's property. And that's really cool. It's kind of Buffy meets Supernatural in college, but in Texas. So you get the double y'alls, and everything's bigger in Texas. It's a ton of fun.
So I think that covers the niche of a niche.
That's right.
There's a lot of things that we talked about over the course of the last 4 years. This is our 200th and final episode, as I was telling you before.
Yeah, you're breaking my heart.
I know. We're making some announcements pretty soon, so which we've discussed briefly.
Yeah, but that's exciting.
It's exciting. But we've really gained a lot of knowledge, and the audience has too. I mean, we've gotten a lot of feedback from your interviews specifically. About, you know, game, because a lot of our audience members are still the community developers, the user-generated content people, and Neverwinter Nights wanted
right.
to. And the one thing that I get a lot of is, you know, saying that Shane, he's a really cool guy. He knows what he's talking about. He's got it. And one of the things that I keep hearing coming back to, and it even resonates in my head almost every day when I'm working on something, is you got to find your fun. You told me years ago, you said, hey, the key to a successful product is finding your fun, and then worry about the details after that. If you can spend all this time working on
it. Amen.
And, you know, we want to thank you, you know, for that pearl of wisdom.
Well, thank you.
And many others that you shared with
me. You know, Neil Gaiman said something recently I thought was really good. He said that, I think it was, I'm sure somebody can find the quote and make it better than I am, but it's something like the key to success is make great art. Make great art, right? And another friend of mine, Thomas Denmark, he's an artist. He did the cover to Deadlands Reloaded. He has many pieces here in the hall from TSR and everybody else, Hasbro. It's the best business plan is to make good products.
Yeah.
And that's true, right? Whether you're making a UGC module or a print product like we do, or you know, a computer game or anything, you know, put your heart and soul into it. Make it awesome.
Yeah, and we can say for sure, after learning your products and actually taking the time out playing a little bit of your products. It's outside of our D&D focus, but we actually got into this. We liked what we've seen.
Oh, right.
And some of our players have actually done the same thing. And, we are really appreciative of the quality work you guys put out.
Oh,
I mean,
thanks.
Your company's putting up. I mean, I love the Weird Wars. I don't know. If somebody would have told me off the street, hey, would you check this out? I might check it out. But then after seeing it and getting into it, I was like, this is cool.
You know, Weird Wars is an interesting thing you bring up because that's a real challenge because one person in the group is the leader of the group, right? And he can tell you to, especially like Weird Wars Rome is the last one we did, he can tell you to go sacrifice yourself, throw yourself on your sword, that kind of stuff. That's a strange relationship for a player character party
right.
to have, right? But that's also the fun and challenge of it and what makes it a little different besides
right.
just fighting Roman flavored, you know, bad guys and monsters. So, you know, that's an instance where the guys who worked on it, I think, put their heart and soul into it, made it awesome, and that's why I think it is a ton of fun.
It is. It really is. And, you know, one of the things that stands out to me is the wide breadth of content you do. Yeah, you know, sometimes we talked to Maxwell Alexander Drake. Remember the author that we talked to out in Origins back way back in 2012? Yeah, you know, he had brought up something that was really good. Was talking about how a lot of times writers get pigeonholed into certain things, you know, methodologies or, you know, topics or whatever. And the one thing that stood out to me when he was talking about that, I was like, see, you know, Shane didn't get pigeonholed. I mean, that's like the genius of the fact that, like, when we look at all this, even the Army of Darkness manual you wrote.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that was a lot of fun. We have a concept that we're building to, and we're pretty close to it now, and next year it'll be even more evident, that I call the Wall of Wonder. So, you know, if you want to play a good D&D style game, you're probably going to play D&D or Pathfinder or whatever, and that's great. Love those games. If you want to play other stuff, I really want you to come to our booth and see this huge wall where you're going to see East Texas University and The Last Parsec and Deadlands and Hell on Earth and Sixth Gun and Lankmar and all of these different things.
Yep.
And that's what we call the Wall of Wonder, and we want it to inspire you and make you go, I want to play that and play that and play that and play that, and that's who we want to be.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it shows in all your products. So, I mean, look, hey, for people who don't even really participate in a lot of pen and paper stuff, with a lot of electronic medium folks that listen to the podcast, and then they come tell me, or they send me personal PMs or emails or whatever. You post on our Facebook page, you know, whatever. That says something.
That's like, great.
It is great. We're happy to have done that.
And we see it at conventions, too. People do things that we can't necessarily publish, right? Like I've seen Savage Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. I've seen Savage Scooby-Doo. You know, all this just amazing ideas. People are so creative if you give them the tools to do it, as you guys know better than anybody from the Neverwinter crowd.
Oh, yeah, some of our clientele, we'll just put it that way, clientele,
right.
They'll even actually develop their own stuff and submit it.
Yeah.
If we like it, guess where it goes?
That's right, yeah.
It's our own version of Neverwinter.
Sure.
Just without that, without the official thing there.
Well, we said on Neverwinter many times that, you know, while a lot of the stuff you get is, you know, not so polished or whatever, there are plenty of things that are submitted and we have played that are better than we do ourselves. Those people are out there if you give them the tools to do it.
I agree with you with that one. You know, we were talking briefly about Kickstarters. What Kickstarters do you have coming online pretty soon or active?
So we just finished East Texas University. Most of the digital goods have been delivered. The print books are in process of being printed, and we'll deliver those. Up next is The Last Parsec, which old D&D TSR fans might remember a product called Star Frontiers from TSR, which I, you know, when I was in my teens, was one of my favorite games. This is not Star Frontiers, but it's definitely a spiritual homage to it.
Right.
It is planetary exploration. It's not really space opera. It's not really hard sci-fi. It's somewhere in between, and it's just a ton of fun. And even better, the brand manager for it is Tim Brown, who was one of the co-creators for Dark Sun and was running TSR's creative department at the time. He's also the brand manager for Lankmar. So I've got a lot of old ties back to the D&D days.
It's funny how a lot of that stuff, I mean, like, you've networked with people. I mean, we've networked with people with D&D. I mean, but you have it from the grassroots. I mean, it's got to feel awesome.
I'm probably second generation or so, right? I never worked with Gary or Frank or any of those guys, though I know and knew them. But one of the coolest things, since we brought that up, somebody took my... When D&D 3.0 came out, I bought a book. Somebody had to stand in line for me because I was working the booth to get Gary to sign it. And he signed it, and he said, "Great work on Deadlands, Shane," and knew who I was. And that, to me, was one of the, you know, the highlights of my career.
Oh,
and that's on my shelf at home. I just said that was the coolest thing ever.
You wish you could. It's like one of those things, you take a slice of time, and you can be like, "Here, I'm going to put this on the wall." You know?
Yeah. So... I don't know how much time we have, so I'm going to take up too much.
We have an hour.
So I was a playtester and demo guy for Dangerous Journeys, which was another one of Gary's games, right? Mm-hmm. And he sent Christmas cards to all the playtesters. And I just thought that was the coolest thing in the world. I got a Christmas card personally signed by Gary Gygax, right? Coolest thing in the world. So I opened it up. I'm getting chills thinking about it right now because I opened it up, and it was this really thick paper. And I sliced my finger to the bone.
Yes.
On this envelope as I tried to open it.
Oh, my goodness.
And I gushed blood all over it, all over my carpet. I got the best stories for this podcast.
Hey.
I called it my Gygaxian envelope of wounding.
Wow.
And I still have it covered in blood, yeah.
It's a cursed item. You can't drop it.
I showed it to him the next year at a convention. So, yeah.
Well, the question is, was it an important document?
It was just a Christmas card.
Okay. As I say, that would have been, signed in blood.
I think I still have the scar, in fact. It was that bad. It was horrible. I can't see it.
Now he sends everybody that real thin parchment paper. Yeah. You know, getting on a little bit further into the topics. I know last year we had talked about some of your role play experience. And the thing that blew up our Facebook page and other things was the cobalt snipping story. Now, you talked on camera, next year we would talk about some more. Well, unbelievably, it's next year already.
It's like, next year already.
It's like we just went, yeah, it's like, you all have right. Anything that comes off your
I've probably got lots. So we talked about the cobalt snipping story last year, which came from an Australian. I got to go to Australia, was a guest there, played a game. It was first edition AD&D. We were all kobolds. You've heard the story. Or if you haven't, go back and check the old episode.
Episode 180.
At the same convention, a guy wanted to run Deadlands so that I got to play, because I didn't get to play that much, right? And he ran it for me and my wife. So it's my wife and I and two other people, and it's basically he set up the X-Files. So this one really cool guy, his name was Lon, and I'll never forget it, was playing kind of the Mulder type. But he was actually kind of a more experienced, more haggard, grizzled Mulder type. Okay. My wife was the Scully, and I was basically this young huckster kid who had one spell, Hunch, that would really help him reveal mysteries, right?
Okay.
So we go into this town, and the people are acting really funny. And we finally figure out it's this Deadlands monster called Pit Wasps. And Pit Wasps are kind of... they're like the chest bursters from Aliens, right? They get inside you and they burst out. But until they burst out, they take you over and make you do strange things. So that's what was going on. We eventually figured it out. So my boss, Lon, says, you know, this whole town's infected. I want you to get them into the church, and we're going to lock the doors, and we're going to burn the church down before this spreads any further. I'm like, you know, this is the nuclear option,
yeah, right?
Right. So... my character, and I wrote the City of Gloom boxed set, and I'm thinking, you know, in City of Gloom, there's 600-pound Sally, this character, who can bring stuff almost like same-day delivery from the City of Gloom to where we're at. So I said, let's get on the telegraph. Let's get her to come here and bring castor oil. Castor oil is what kills the pit wasps inside, and we'll save all these people, right? And the boss is kind of looking at me like, I don't know if we got time, son. I'm like, come on, we got to do this. And so we do it. It's in route. It's coming. We've locked everybody in the church just to be safe in the meantime. And my character had a crush on my wife's character, who had a crush on, you know, the lawn character. So I was, you know, trying to impress her and save all these people and everything else. So we're standing there talking, and I'm doing something to try to impress her or whatever. And this woman comes up, and she's like, when are y'all going to let us out of this church? I'm, and the pit wasp bursts out, right? So... all the other congregation is standing around, and they see this, and they're like, because they didn't know what was going on. Now they do. They start to panic, and they start to, you know, rush out of the church, and it's going to spread.
Right.
So my boss is like, and he's going for his Gatling pistol. And I said, wait, I can fix this. And I go, so we have this device called the Mnemonizer, which we totally stole from Johnny Mnemonic, or Men in Black, right, where you flash it, and the crowd forgets what just happened.
Right.
Well, in Deadlands, we have catastrophic malfunction rules for mad science gizmos. Well, sure enough, I roll catastrophic malfunction. And a catastrophic malfunction for that device is that it burns everyone's eyes out. They actually melt out of your face.
Oh,
so half the congregation is and they're screaming and so forth. And my wife's character, my love interest, was also affected by that. So her eyes burst. She's screaming. And my boss, and I'll never forget the player who did this, he just looks at me. Pulls out his Gatling gun and just starts going through the hall, killing people left and right. And my, you know, my wife's character is screaming, and my character just goes in the corner and slumps down and kills himself. Oh, that was the end of it.
That's crazy. That is crazy.
Yes.
So, you know, I really, just to add on to that story, I got to say that was awesome. and it's another thing too for the folks who are listening to this interview that. Just to go to show you how creative I mean, I know that, like you say, some Johnny Mnemonics or a bit of a black type of thing, but it's just really cool to even have an epic failure, you know, mechanical failure.
It was
idea.
Fun.
And
that produces the best stories, right? When you have those swingy things that can happen like
that. Yeah, if it's always going to be, hey, you do this, this happens, there's no chance for that to happen. It's a big deal.
Yep. I probably wouldn't even remember the adventure very much if that had not happened. So, even though it was a good one.
Yeah, so that's definitely one of the better RP stories I've heard. That's right up there with the snipped kobolds. Absolutely. Any other ones that come up to your mind? Is that pretty much the top of the heap?
I've got others, but I don't want to take too much of everybody's time. Right. Let's save it for we'll have future interactions at some point.
Absolutely. We could always do appendixes.
Yeah, great. I can do these all day.
The podcast appendix will have
okay.
C chapter 4B.
All right.
So to close out the interview. Like, you've been here this year's Gen Con. Like, what stands out to you being, like, one of the coolest things you've seen this year so far? And how's your stuff going and the events that you're running?
So this Gen Con has been very strange for me. It's been nothing but I'm a guest this year, so it's been nothing but panels and meetings. And I haven't really got to walk the floor much or see much. But what I have, when I have, what's really standing out to me is what Kickstarter in particular has allowed to happen to the industry, and I mean this in a good way. There are so many new people making so many crazy different things that we never could have really done before because it was so risky, or because you usually get friends, family, or fools to invest in your company, and then you lose it, and then you build your second company and hope you do better.
Right.
But Kickstarter funds it all ahead of time, and I don't know what the percentage is, but a large percentage seem to be delivering great quality stuff to the people. So while it's more competition for my company and what I do, I've that's never bothered me. I'm okay competing. I feel good about what we do and what we make. So it's really great to see so much cool creative stuff. It's a high watermark of geekdom right now, right?
Absolutely.
Games, comics. I mean, when I was 10 years old, I was a comic book geek. I would not wear my Spider-Man shirt out to school or something.
You roll it out.
Yeah, right? But now, everywhere you go, I mean, every age group, every demographic is wearing obscure comic book characters, like Bizarro or something, right? It's not just Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, Hulk.
Nope.
I mean, it's
and all over.
Rocket Raccoon. I mean, for God's sake. It's awesome.
Well, that's just, you take a look for like the Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, that show, I mean, it's pretty true to form to, what the game. I know, obviously, it's exaggerated for television, but regardless, there is a lot of grits of truth there about clientele.
So. Never been a better time to be, a nerd or geek or whatever we want to call ourselves. Never been a better time.
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, it's been outstanding.
Absolutely. I hope it lasts a good long while.
Oh, I do, too. Yeah. Like I said before, with the Kickstarter and with all the work that you're doing, it's huge to the gaming industry.
Yeah.
It's really huge.
Well, I think we're seeing that we're not the only ones who feel that way, because I don't know what the attendance is this year, but as you were saying, it's packed here.
Yeah.
There are tons of people. I would not be surprised to hear astronomical numbers.
Yeah, last year I think it was like 49,000 something. Mm. This year's got to be higher than that. We're talking 60s, maybe even higher than that even. Yeah, because we can't get around the hall. Last night that's one of the reasons I missed your email. It was like, as we were fumbling through the hall, can't check yourself. You can't check nothing. It was just, that's the kind of stuff. I mean, it's good, but at the same time, it's just to show you the growth of the con. It's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, I mean, that's something I noticed from the last few years we've come to this year, is it's also a lot more wider of an age range. It's a lot more families that you see.
Oh, yeah.
It's not just, the one dad that's dressed up as Spider-Man dragging his kid that looks like he doesn't want to be there behind him, or vice versa.
Yeah, it's the dad dragging his three or four teenage kids dressed up in costumes, right?
Exactly.
Right.
And the dad's Darth Vader.
That's right. It's awesome.
So, well, I mean, I can't believe another year is here and gone already. I mean, we have still another day or so, but the point is it just can't come and gone so fast. But at the same time, we did a lot of stuff last year, so really thank you again for taking your time.
Sure. I had a lot of great experiences on the Neverwinter MMO. I mean, working with Cryptic, all my friends there, those are all fantastic. But definitely one of the really cool things that came out of it was getting to meet you guys and do this every year. This is really fun for me. I hope it is for the audience.
It is. And it is for us. And like I said before, we're humbled.
Same here.
To be able to meet up with you. And it's been awesome. So,
definitely.
And for all those listening, we're going to be taking a mosey old stroll over to Shane's product booth for the Savage Worlds and taking a look at some of the great stuff that he's been putting out. We've taken steel pictures. We went around your booth every year.
Okay.
Gen Con, Origins. And
awesome.
We've taken
every
show wrap-up. We always have a whole photo barrage of your products on there. So
awesome.
This will be no different, except we're actually going to do it personally. So
cool.
I think it's going to be pretty cool. So.
That's great. Thank you.
Yep. So continue watching. We have a few more interviews that we're going to be having after this. So Thanks again for watching, and thanks to Shane for coming back on for a fourth appearance.
Thank you, and congratulations on 200 episodes.
200.
200 episodes. It's amazing.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Good seeing you.
You too.
Well, we're here at 2014 Gen Con, and this is an absolute awesome honor to be able to talk to Obsidian Entertainment, Shane DeVriest.
Yep.
And really glad to have you on board. We are so excited about the Pillars of Eternity project. We've supported the Kickstarter. We've talked to Vargas. We talked to Josh, and we're so excited to get this product rolling to where it is today.
Absolutely. You know, that's great.
First of all, thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thank you.
And taking time out of your busy day here.
Well, it's a little bit of a homecoming. I mean, I was actually the very first community manager on Neverwinter 2. So I was with Obsidian back in the last big fantasy days. So it's fun.
It's fun. Well, yeah, before we go on, I just want to say we represent the Neverwinter Nights community. It's 1 and 2. And
sure.
We still play the game 10 years later almost.
Yep.
And so from everybody, you know, I'm going to channel your thoughts through me and say thank you very much, and thanks to everybody in your organization for putting such a great product out there that's lived for so long. It broke records, if you ask me, how long that many people were playing the game still after that
sure,
many years.
Sure, sure. Well, great games, you know, they have a life.
Absolutely. Anyway, go on. So, you know, we're here today to talk about Pillars of Eternity.
Right.
The next generation of products from Obsidian Entertainment is going to be awesome, community-inspired with the Kickstarter.
Right,
and
right.
Everything like that. So you can just tell us a little bit about how the project's going and, you know, where we're at and how you've been,
first of all, thanks for being here. Anytime that we get to interact with the community, see the community, especially our backers, it's always great. It's a huge thrill. And we've had a lot of backers actually come out and see us at Gen Con, which is awesome. We have these kind of cool little flasks and stuff we're giving, but I think it's really important for people to actually see the game, which is actually in a very, you know, we're in a really good place. The backer beta is out. You know, we're showing it here. We're showing it at Gamescom. So we're on track. And I think the fact that people are actually getting to play something that's a fairly polished experience. Kind of the best thing you can do to talking about a game is saying, well, you know, what did you think of it?
Absolutely. You know, I want to, you know, preface this question knowing, you know, we've been following the progress, but
sure.
All the public posts that have been going out by Josh and others,
right.
And specifically the ones that Josh has put out showing, like, bringing it to the community, like, the actual supporters about how the development goes and
sure.
With the features and stuff like that. Position in the corporation.
Yeah.
How are you interacting with this process and working with the community, like your backers to get stuff, or are you like just
so,
working with them? Or
so my, I mean, if you're kind of asking what my role is, so I mean, as marketing director, you know, we have multiple projects that we work on. I spend more of my time on Eternity, and then on our Pathfinder stuff, and that's more my history is. I'm a fantasy guy.
Right.
So the team is, by the time I came on, which came on about 6 months ago, had such a formula. Like, they had such a, sometimes there's a don't, if it's not broken, don't fix it.
Right.
My goal mostly is to support them. We obviously have a distribution marketing partnership with Paradox. I deal with Paradox a lot and coordinating stuff on that end. And the relationship that Josh and Brandon and the team have with the backers, that's so solid. At this point, you know, I can help them with whatever they need.
Right.
But they've got a pretty well-oiled machine that I...
Just do, yeah, right.
If they need help, I'm there for them. But,
yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
What's excited you most about this project so far?
You know, I kind of have a funny story is that I had... I'd worked for them before. I went to work at a different company. I worked for CCP for a number of years. And when I was looking to come back to the West Coast, I mean, I'm from LA. I love LA, Southern California. And I stayed really good friends with Vargas and Darren and the Parkers and all those guys for years. We had lunch at least once a year. And I came back and I had taken a job with a different company. And the first day I took a job is the day the Kickstarter started.
Wow.
And my favorite game of all time is Baldur's Gate 2. And like Baldur's Gate 2, I think, is the my personal greatest role-playing game ever made.
They're all great. Yeah.
And I went down and I had lunch with them, and I was like, this is the game I've wanted to work on my whole life. And you guys are doing this now? Like, now?
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, it's a thrill just to get to work on, you know, a spiritual successor to what got me into games and that I've always, you know.
I would have to say Baldur's Gate and Baldur's Gate 2 got me into the whole genre in a lot of ways. And then in the Neverwinter.
Sure.
I was actually a holdout for a while.
I kind of was too.
Really?
So, I mean,
Skull and Shekels,
you know, Baldur's Gate, Baldur's Gate really got me into the D&D video games. You know, then I saw the Ice Medale stuff. And then, like, I mean, like, these are the games I love the most. Like, out of any game. So the fact that, and there's a real, like, I love the idea of, there's sort of renaissance, and when you get to kind of be the tip of the spear, as I like to call it, like, you know, these games only went away because, you know, big companies stopped making them.
Right.
Not because people stopped wanting them.
You're absolutely right.
Not everything can be Call of Duty, and so, you know, I think it's, that's just neat. I mean, like, there's kind of points in time where you get to be part of something. That a lot of people are part of.
Yeah.
And you get to, you know, for call it for whatever reason, like, I mean, it's a real privilege to get to make games like this, to get to work in the game business, and you never kind of forget that.
Right.
But when you have a moment with a product like this, then it's very crystal. Like, you're kind of, they're living in a special moment amongst a bunch of special moments.
Well, I think one of the things that really stands out to me is that you just nailed it on the head right off the bat. It's not that people don't want the product.
Right.
It's the big game companies aren't making the product. And you just nailed it.
I think the one thing you are seeing, though, it's that this has actually, I think, opened people's eyes. And, you know, because you're seeing more stuff like this.
Right.
You know, fortunately, the industry is seemingly starting to diversify again. You know, more people playing RPGs and fantasy games. That's... There's always more people, you know. So there's more than enough space for.
There's tons of space.
Yeah.
Well, we talked about it before too, like with World of Warcraft. Like, they just lost like millions of players just in the last quarter, and it's like, wonder why you're rolling out the same stuff over and over again. I'm not bashing it. I'm just saying, it's like but we're still playing Neverwinter Nights too.
I had a water balloon fight at lunch the other day with people from Blizzard, so we're good friends.
I just want to check, you know, I won't bash anybody's preferred gaming, but nonetheless.
So is there something that you guys have done that you can share that you really loved or you thought was a brilliant idea, or even it's something funny that people can find in the game?
You know, I don't want to ruin anything, and Josh can probably tell a much better, funnier story than I can. You know, for me, the thing that I like the most, and it's not funny, but like if you really look at the game, I really like the way the game. When you're ever trying to make something that's kind of a homage, you're always sort of in this. You're operating within narrower parameters, so it needs to look and feel like what you remember. But at the same point, like look new. And for me, every time I look at the game, like, I love the effects. Like, it's just that's, you know, it just looks great.
Right.
You know, and that it's, you know, there's certainly new elements and there's different classes. It's always fun to see, you know, how the guys come up with what they come up with.
Yeah, at this point, we're trying.
But to your point, I think that's something that really helps, because I know we've struggled at times with Trinity of, how do we put something in that's an homage but not it?
Right.
Because, yeah, to your point, otherwise, it's okay, we put some new visual effects on it and we're calling it something, but...
Sure.
Yeah, it's good to hear, though, because I know, you know, I've been following the Kickstarter, I know Brian has as well, and it's something great to hear is that, oh, these are the features you're adding, or, oh, here's how things are going, and obviously behind us, you know, we have... You know, people trying it, and you know, it's just great to see that it is truly, you know, what the spirit is meant to be.
Sure. Yeah, I think it's also neat to see there's a lot of people that are, I mean, even just people in general. And if you take the backers, obviously, and they're there. We have it because of them.
Right.
But I mean, we know they love it, and they know we love it. But they also sort of has opened the doors to a lot of other people that have gone, you know, I really like those type of games, but had just never thought about it.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Right.
So.
Yeah, a lot of stuff that we see. I mean, it goes back. It goes a lot. You're right. When it comes back to the origins, like Baldur's Gate and stuff like that, even Neverwinter Nights to a certain extent.
Planescape.
There's that feeling of those games that they have that you can't mass produce. Like it's got to be grown from somebody's eye. You know, really good vision of the product and what they want to do.
There's no. You can't have a kind of a rinse and repeat formula. I mean, it doesn't work that way with these games.
No, it doesn't. Yeah, you could try to make another game exactly like the one before and say, oh, I want to bring people in. But then why did you do it?
Yeah,
then make it the same game.
Right.
Why? Why would you do that? That's one of the things with what I've already seen with Pillars that stands out to me, and I think a lot of our community members, that it's not the same old game.
It's totally different.
And it's a model that, frankly, if it becomes a standard, it would be the best for the game industry.
Sure.
Right.
The community is actually helping organize your content.
Yep. I think it's a natural evolution of, you know, back at Black Isle, Fergus likes to tell the story about that they were really the first, or one of the first companies to ever put up a forum. I think it's just sort of indicative of it's indicative just of the kind of core culture around a group of guys that have built their whole company as from being gamers of like, you know, that's kind of where it should go, is us and a relationship directly with the fans.
Right. No, I know I appreciate what's going on with what you're doing and
right.
the project, and we're going to continue to cover it all the way through to release. You know, so, do you have a release date yet, or are you still kind of, we're still kind of working on things?
Well, we have a, no.
That's fine. We don't want rush. We're not rushing anything. So that, you know, I think that's one of the big things that I hear a lot of times. You know, it's like, well, we see a lot of times, you know, games come out and there's 55 patches afterwards. And it's like taking the time to do it the way you're doing it, it's just a breath of fresh air to see the care that's going into these.
Well, it's really important to us that, I mean, it's really important just that one, it comes out in a reasonable amount of time. But at the same point, you know, that it's good. I mean, that it's good.
First impressions, what do they say, right?
First impressions are hard
to meet. I mean, that's just the way it goes.
Sure.
So, I mean, obviously, we have a few players behind us.
Sure.
Has the overall impression been, oh, this is even more than I thought? Is it? It's exactly what I imagined?
I'll just say the reaction has been very strong. Yeah, it's not a bad word in the house. And I say that honestly. I mean, you know, there's different flavors of ice cream for everybody, but for whatever reason, everyone seems to like the flavor that we're all offering. So.
I mean, I know while you and Brian were talking earlier, I was sort of watching it, and I didn't see one person leave without a smile on their face.
Yeah,
so
no,
that
I mean,
kind of tells you.
But yeah, for sure. I mean, that's why we're making the game.
Yeah, and we're really glad that you are. And you know, in closing, is there anything else you'd like to share with the community before we close out?
No, just you know, mostly just thanks. You know, thanks for your continued support. Thanks for being there, and you know, helping us be, you know, bring RPGs kind of, you know, back to the masses. I mean, and you know, it's sort of like kind of renaissance that we're getting to do, and everyone's getting to lead with us. So that's the most important thing.
Absolutely. And that, you know, like I said before, I really thank you for your time.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming.
Great. If you believe it's been a whole year since the last time we caught up with this very talented writer, Maxwell Alexander Drake, thanks for coming back on the show.
I appreciate it. Thanks for inviting me.
Good to see you.
Very much. Good to be seen.
Yeah, this is our 200th episode, and you know, it's really awesome to get you on the final straw, so to speak, before we pack up the pack of D20s and head out to the sunset. So,
you know, I'm really glad you got to come back on. And, you know, with all the stuff you got going on, what have you been up to since last year's interview?
Well, last year was the first month that I could announce that I was, you know, lead fiction writer for EverQuest Next from Sony Online Entertainment. I had been working for them before that, but I was under an NDA, couldn't say anything, couldn't talk about it. But it's been a year now. Every month we're releasing stories through that, EverQuestNext.com, and media and ebooks, and there is a plethora of stories out now. And they're I'm really proud of them. You know, when Sony approached me and was talking about doing it, it was a lot on my mind, and I really like it. Sony's been a dream to work for. The team is brilliant. The quality and effort that they're putting into the game is breathtaking. But, and I know this is the mouse taunting the lion, but I really had an attitude of, I'm not going to write stories for your game. You're going to make a game off of my stories.
Which is awesome.
Which is stupid.
It's awesome.
Especially considering that they're this big behemoth. But I really wanted the quality of these stories to be well-written works of fiction and not just tie-in work. It's one of the reasons why I hadn't broken into tie-in, you know, in years past. It wasn't something I was that interested in doing. Mm-hmm. But it was such a great opportunity with the EverQuest Next franchise. And they, like I said, the story is amazing. I love the fact that it's a reboot, that it's not a continuation. I had a fan here ask me yesterday, he said, you know, were you nervous about taking over 14 years of story and try? I'm like, no, it doesn't work that way. I took over 14 years of notes because, you know, the team has had the ability to decide, oh, I like this, I don't like that, we can change this, we can make this better, we can, you know, we can adjust this. And they've really done a great job of keeping it consistent. And then it's handed off to me to flesh it out so that, you know, the internal team, Steven DeNuser is the lead lore and just doing a fantastic job. He creates the kind of the skeleton work, and then he hands those off to me, and then I put the emotions and the how did this happen and why did this happen. And so that 20,000 years of history before the game launches is my playground, and it's just been a lot of fun to flesh those out. And the reviews are fantastic. Like when the first story came out, the very first professional review on it said, you know, everybody knows you don't read lore stories for the story, you read it for the lore. And he goes, and I don't know where they got this guy from, but I'm very happy to say these are just some very solid written stories. And that's what I was shooting for.
And I would say, you know, if you had asked me, well, what would be the outcome of this if I didn't know you and had read Genesis of Oblivion, I said the exact same thing. These would have been solid, robust, full and complete stories that you would be able to get into it and actually feel the immersion behind the scenes. Right. So you feel like you're part of it,
right,
more or less.
But one of the things that Terry said, he's the producer, when he was talking to me, one of his goals at the very beginning was, I want to go to a convention and I want to meet a fan who's playing EverQuest Next who tells me, you know, I never was going to play your game, but then I read the stories and the background and the world was so well fleshed out and so well developed that I just couldn't skip playing the game. I just enjoyed the story so much it brought me into the game. And so that's, you know, and that's my attitude. I want people and my fan base that aren't necessarily gamers, you know, I'm pushing them and they're enjoying the stories because they like my writing style. So they want to continue that. And plus, you know, the third book is encroaching on 3 years late, the third book of the Genesis of Oblivion series. So they're waiting patiently. And one of the things that is pushing that back, or one of the things that has pushed that back, has been the fact that I'm, you know, writing for Sony. I mean, there's only so much time in the day to write.
Right.
So
absolutely.
Sony's a good client of mine, and I love the world, and I love writing, so I'm going to spend time doing that, and that obviously takes away from the others.
I got a question for you. Now we're a year later. Now, mm-hmm. See, last year at the same time, when we had fatefully bumped into each other out in the halls of Gen Con 2013,
yep.
You know, you had brought up the whole idea that you were going to, you know, the whole process that you're going to be working with Sony and everything, right? So over the last year, how did things turn out a year later, like your experiences from what you expected that they would be like, or you may have imagined things be the way they would have been like?
I actually think they've turned out better. I mean, I went into the project. I'm not in the gaming world. I'm not a game designer or a game writer or anything like that. I'm an author. So I didn't know. And so that unknown is always what creates the fear and what creates the anxiety.
Right.
So, you know, I did have that, oh my God, what's going to happen? You know, is this going to work out right? You know, so on and so forth. But I couldn't imagine a better company to work with. And not only can I not imagine, I you know, I know a lot of tie-in writers. So I talk to them about the situation that I'm in and the freedom that I have and the ability to do, you know, what I need to do. And obviously within the bounds. I mean, that's the thing about being a tie-in writer is you're still playing in someone else's sandbox. So when they send me a note that's, you know, I see what you did here, I don't like it, change it, then I don't call back and say, screw you, I wanted it done that way. And, no, it's their story, it's their, so I just change what it is. They didn't like the direction I took there, I'll take a different direction. It's their product.
That's right.
But it, you know, they really do genuinely appreciate how I'm approaching this, and I think it's been a really good relationship between the two of us. I think they really feel like they've gotten, I think they also feel the same way. I think that they feel that they've gotten more out of me than they were expecting, which is a great feeling to have overcome those or to have exceeded their expectations.
That's what you want. You want somebody that you're looking to, you know, continue work with,
right.
to think that you're valuable,
right?
Because if they don't, well, you know,
yeah, the value can quickly dwindle if things go awry. But no, I mean these guys, just I'm ecstatic, and I didn't play EverQuest 1 or 2. But I've talked to plenty of fans at play, and so I've been told from fans things that they've liked and things that they didn't like. And while I can't tell them the stuff behind the scenes, I do see that Sony is really, I mean, they've been doing this for 15 years, this one franchise. So they're really doing a great job of taking what they've learned and deciding how can we fix that, how can we make that better. And I'm ecstatic to be a part of that process,
which is awesome. I mean, that, you know, something that you had brought up too before about like somebody might come back to you. It's you know, you write something, it's not quite the direction you're looking for. I mean, they're owners of the product, right? But the fact that they brought you on board is you're somebody that can take a direction, change. You can go 360 around and do something totally different. It's all because of your skills and your ability to write different variations and different things and backdrops and stories. That's what you're trained. I mean, that's,
right.
You know, you could have picked any, but we need somebody to do a little lore over here and about this little side town over here somewhere. Well, yeah, okay, that's fine. But if they come to them and say, hey, I need you to do this differently, they might be like, oh, well, this is the way I really, they might not be able to think.
And you'd be surprised. I mean, I've been writing for a long time. You'd be surprised how pigeonholed some writers actually are. That's usually a thing that stops them from moving up the chain and becoming deeper into the professional game. Good writers can do whatever, but younger writers or new writers, they do have the one direction that they have the ability to write in, and then, you know, they can't, they find it difficult to kind of work their way out of that.
Yep. Yeah, I've seen that happen in game development, period. Like, even like maybe the writing isn't so much, you know, they're doing a lot of lore and a lot of actual in-depth storytelling, but say the game style, you know, the features that they're doing, they get stuck in those same features. You see that with RPGs, you see that with a lot of stuff that comes out, you know, we seen this 5 years ago and it was just like that or, you know, whatever. So, I mean, to be able to get out of those pigeonholes not only helps you as a writer, but it also helps you in any professional endeavor. I think you can extrapolate the two.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So, after EverQuest, like what else we got going on? I mean, I know you got the third book was submitted.
For all those fans that have been patiently waiting, the third book has been turned into the publisher. It's not available at Gen Con, but it is finished and is turned in. It still has to go through the editing process and then all the different things that the publisher does. So I'm assuming probably 3 to 5 months we'll see that on the shelves.
Awesome.
I've already started on the fourth book of that series. I am still doing a couple of little combo projects. Working with artists is harder than I thought it was going to be, so I'm not going to say anything about that. But you know, moving forward and having some progress with that, and when we get to a project that's finished and we can start releasing it to the public, it's going to be really awesome.
Maybe Gen Con 2015.
Maybe Gen Con 2015. Maybe. Actually, for one of the titles, I'm hoping Gen Con 2015.
Okay, so yeah.
You know, just I still do the training, I still do the teaching, I still do the private critiquing. So I do take on 10 private students at a time and work with their stuff and their manuscript and so on and so forth.
Very nice.
So if anybody's interested in that, they can always email me. Same old, same old. I think the biggest difference is from last year to this year, and it definitely has to do with Sony. I was still chasing every single lead. I was, you know, because I'm still a budding author, I'm still not quite making a living at everything, so you're chasing those leads to try to make the income.
Sure.
And now I'm not doing that anymore. Like I got invited to an industry party Wednesday night, and I was like, you know, I'm going to go play some games. Because I really can't take on any more clients right at this particular moment now anyway.
Right, you're so right, saturation.
I'm oversaturated, yeah. And I'm weeding it down. I'm dropping projects and finishing them up and getting rid of them. But it was a weird. For 8 years, everything I got invited to, I went to, and I passed out cards, and I've networked, and I've never, ever once until Wednesday night when somebody invited me to go to an industry party, I've never said no. And it was, I don't know, it's kind of refreshing to say, you know, I'm gonna go play some games, and I'm not gonna be chasing the dog.
I think we've experienced just that exact thing last year, as a matter of fact, after last year. Because last year when we came out here last year, we were invited to that Sundering event. It was a private event. It was held over in an old-time movie theater down the street. Right. They were having, it was only invitation only. And we were thinking, hey, you know, that's pretty cool. We'll go. You know, especially with our affiliation with Cryptic and Perfect World, you know, and the things that we were doing. I was like, well, sure, we'll check it out. Maybe we'll get some leg coverage here to see how we can move them further on in the industry. And, you know, after doing that, you know, chasing that down, then now this year we're so packed up with our own stuff that we got going on. It's like, I can't. Yeah. If the same thing were to happen again, I would have to say no.
Right.
So I know exactly how you feel with that.
So it is. It's finally nice to get to the level, because I mean, you know, this is a tough industry. It's a tough industry to make a living at. It's a tough industry to break into, and you know. 8 years, although it was really weird because, you know, EverQuest Next won't officially come out for a while. I don't know how long. No one said, it's above my pay grade, but not in the next 12 months. Or at least I don't think, maybe it is. So again, it's above my pay grade. But as the game gets closer and closer, like, so there's not a huge amount of traffic in EverQuest Next. This is not out.
Right.
So, but as we get closer and closer to launch date, and as they start ramping up their marketing, I'm continuing to write these stories and releasing them through their site. And I realized just yesterday that there's going to be fans that I pick up 2 years from now when the game launches that are going to be like, wow, look at this guy. He came out of nowhere and was an overnight success. And they're not going to know anything about the 12 years of, you know, eating ramen noodles and living out of a van and
down by the river.
Right, trying to work your way to claw and scratch and get, you know, one more person to read one more book. And, you know, it's not going to be that. They're going to be like, oh, you know, he's Mr. Bigwig and he didn't work for that. It just happened yesterday. And that's a weird realization. And I'm not saying it is going to happen because it still hasn't.
But
if it happens, that I know that there's going to be, you know, I'll have fan base that have that. That's weird.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah, it's an interesting, weird thing because the timing of how games are released nowadays. You know, for a perfect example, Obsidian started a Kickstarter in 2012 called Project Eternity. Now the product is getting close to being released. It's called Pillars of Eternity. Mm-hmm. The point is that their Kickstarter is fully funded back in, I believe, February or March 2012. Mm-hmm. And here it is now, it's 2014, August-ish, and the game's still not released yet. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, people paid for this game. Game development is not 5 minutes, it's not a year. Especially like EverQuest Next, it's a serious product.
It's a huge game.
It's going to take more than a couple of years.
Right.
It really should take more than a couple of years.
Right. The fans need it to take more, because you want a good product. You want something... Especially in MMO. I mean, I'm an MMOer. You spend a lot of time in the world, in creating your character, creating, you know, leveling up and getting more experience, getting more loot, getting more everything.
Getting game? Right.
you don't want to have a crappy game. You don't want it to peter out or whatever, because you're putting in that personal time.
Right.
So you need them to spend that time, and yeah, it's I'm not in the gaming market, but 3 to 4 years is what I'm kind of seeing is a more normal timeline than not. So.
Absolutely.
And I think a lot of that too is just the fact that, you know, especially with MMOs, you got to worry about storyline, you got to worry about gameplay. Granted, they don't have to worry as much about lore since they have you on board, but.
Well, no,
you know, you see a lot of various concerns that people get into that, okay, you do the main plot, you do the main run, maybe you do some side quests, you do the end game, now you're done because there's nothing left to do. And right. I think that's where things like, you know, what you're working on to create these backgrounds, the rich environment of the lore, mm-hmm. I think that's where a lot of it helps, because if you go, okay, I've finished the end quest, okay, I can run around and get, you know, the new hat or the new, you know, shoes or whatever the new right. thing for that specific week is.
Right.
Okay, but again, that might keep you somebody that plays once a week for an hour, but it's not going to keep, you know, a community. It's not going to give people, if they want to RP or if they want to know about where they are and why they're there and why they're doing
right.
what they're doing.
Yeah, that's the thing that attracts me to it the most, because you could run around the game and find maybe a deserted, you know, ruined city, and that's great, but what about reading a story where you live the life of a main character that was, you know, living in the city or attacking the city or whatever when that thing was raised? And,
right.
you know, what was the, you know, drama that led up to that? What was the, you know, political inclinations or whatever that caused this battle to take place and destroy the city?
Right.
And, you can write it in lore where you say, well, it happened this way because the ogres got pissed off and they attacked the city. You know, and that's great. And you're like, okay, the ogres destroyed it. Or you could become an ogre and go through the emotional trauma of
right.
whatever it was that caused them, or, you know, stay whatever, let's say it's human city, making stuff up. So, you know, you could become one of the humans in the city and live it from that perspective. And you can
right.
only get that really, I mean, if you're not going to do it through the video game, which obviously
right.
if this took place 100 years or 200 years or 300 years before the game
right.
launch, you're not doing it in the game. What you can do it in is through creative writing. So you
right.
can just open that story up, you can fall into the character, you can, you know, understand the emotional impact that this had, not just the fact that there's a fallen city, but all
right.
the different lives that were affected that you can do through creative writing that you can't do
right.
through any other medium.
And I think some of that, too, is it also helps the end user's imagination tie in.
Mm-hmm.
Because you see a ruined city, well, you know, when you read the story about it, you can, A, go, okay, this is the street where I think it happened, but B, you can also look at it and go, gee, I can picture this type of a battle occurring here. I can picture how it happened.
Right.
And that adds a dimension to the game.
But even adding a deeper dimension to the game, and the reason why I'm so happy that they decided to bring in writers from the beginning, if you're a dev and you're writing, if you're building that city, and they say, hey, build this ruined city, you can build the ruined city. And then maybe a writer comes in after the fact to now write the thing.
Right.
But writing it beforehand, now the dev can open that story himself and or herself
right.
and read that story and live that experience through the creative, you know, prose process, and then be
yeah.
able to take that written and turn it into a visual.
Right.
Which
so,
is really cool.
And
yeah,
I know,
it really
yeah.
is.
And I know we've done that a little bit on ROT, was when we did our Cormyrian Expanse, we started by writing the story we want the characters to do, and then looking, granted, we had a little bit of a cheat with the background that is mm-hmm. Neverwinter Nights and, you know, that sort of an environment, but the fact that we could say, gee, we need a dock district because this. You need, in the dock district, you need a seedy little bar because that's where, you know, the assassins.
You need the port of call.
Yeah,
the port of call tavern.
But yeah, to your point, it makes it a lot less confusing or painful, especially if you're building a map or if you're designing things, because I can picture that ruined city. If in the story it's talking about how it's in the valley between two glorious mountain peaks and, you know, it's the only strategic pass for the distance, well, if I'm the guy building the map, okay, I need this big
yep.
vista, I need ruined city, you need some sort of way for carts to get through on the main path.
Right.
As opposed to, okay, I'm going to build what I think a city should look like, which, you know, if it's after the fact writing, it makes it a little confusing or a little difficult, because if you talk about the main road and, you know, the player runs there and goes, there seems to be a building in the middle of what I thought was the main road.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, I see a lot of opportunities there with that platform and that product. So,
yes.
You know, I know you're really busy. You got for the audience out there to watch this. This man here is insane. It's just totally insanity filled with the schedule that he's holding right now. I mean, you tell us a little bit about, just real quick before we go, just about like some of the stuff you have going on here at Gen Con.
Well, I have the booth in the author's area. I'm doing 15 hours of training classes or panels or whatever up in the writer's symposium. And then, I mean, that's the majority of it.
Yeah.
In between then, I'm doing a couple different interviews.
Yeah, we bothered him. Yeah, I'm sorry.
actually, I got one at 4.
Yeah,
so.
At 4, so, yep.
it's but it's a part of the process. That's why we do conventions. So I'm trying to spend time with fans. I'm trying to also still do my job, which is promotion and marketing. And then, you know, the training classes are what I give to the convention and the reason why they keep inviting me back year to year. Yep. So, you know, it's writing is not just, or professional writing is not just putting words on paper. There's a lot to it.
No,
there's a lot of facets and angles. Definitely. And social marketing aspect and just everything.
Everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, anything that we found about, you know, whether it's writing, whether it's game development or whatever, there is so many other aspects that go along with it.
Yeah.
What, you know, you just touched on it all. You're marketing. You're going through. You know exactly what it's all about.
Because all I think about is the list, and you just got to kind of, I mean, it's, that's just it. Like I said, that's why it's so nice that this year is one of the first years and I'm just not chasing that dog.
That's awesome.
I mean, I'm still doing the interviews and I'm still doing all that, and that's all still very, very important. But, you know,
that's a big deal.
Relaxing a little bit.
Yeah, you got to relax and you got to take it in a little bit how far you came. So, yeah. I mean, we're glad to have been with you since, you know, 2011, 12. Yeah. I mean, it's been awesome.
Just little bitty sprout.
Yeah.
And I'm still only a sapling, but, you know, you've at least seen me grow a little bit as we've been doing these things, which has been really awesome.
It is. It really has been. It's been a pleasure, you know, interviewing you. And obviously, we're still going to have the podcast, so, you know, if not like in a regular capacity, but if any time you have updates, if you want to come on do an audio podcast, you know, hey, we'll schedule something.
Okay.
We'll make a special 201 episode, episode 201, to make sure that, you know, we get out whatever you have to say when your third book comes out or whatever, you know, request next releases. Well, hey, we'll do one of those retro episodes and we'll go take a step back, you know, whatever that might be, right? You know?
Well, I appreciate that. That's awesome.
So, you know, I really thank you. Any last words, though, before we wrap up the interview? Any final thoughts to the audience or about anything?
No, I mean, this year's been really busy with the Sony stuff, obviously. I actually lost 4 months of work time this year. I got a concussion playing football. And I know I'm too old to be playing football, but and it hit me pretty hard. So I'm still getting over that because that was just 4 months ago. And that's taken a chunk out of my work schedule. You didn't comment on the hair.
Nice.
Last time I was here, it was down in the middle of my back.
Yeah, you know what? It's one of those weird things. I come in, I'm like, I said, yeah, okay, yep. He lost some weight. I gained some weight.
I've been losing a little weight.
I lost
a lot of hair.
Maximal minus minus. We gained some hair, you lost some hair.
So,
awesome, dude.
It's been, I haven't had as many products come out this year, but there's more in the pipeline this year than I've ever had. So next year there's going to be just a crap ton of stuff coming out in a bunch of different things. But mostly it's the Sony, and you know, the nice thing is, and I'm not all of the stories. I do have a couple authors that also work on the project. So, but I'm the main content editor, so it comes, you know, through me anyway, and everything gets edited for consistency. And then, like I said, Steve DeNuser is also brilliant inside making sure that everything is canon and consistent.
Well, you have to have the brand management. Just have to.
Right. So that's really a lot of it. And you're talking a story every single month. So even if it's not my name on it, I still had to deal with it. So that keeps me busy.
I'm sure it does. Well, you know, keep us informed. You know, we'll keep reaching out to you as time goes forward, and
absolutely,
you know, we'll be around in different capacity, which we're going to announce later in the episode. So we'll make sure that we wait for that. Yeah, he knows, but can't say it just yet. So, so thank you again for coming on the show.
Yeah,
I really appreciate all the years of great interviews and just really fun time. So, thanks a lot, man.
Thank you very much. Good luck with everything in the future.
Thanks.
I'm excited for you.
I'm glad of that.
Excited for it.
We'll keep you informed. That's all I can do.
Hi, this is Mark Shook with Neverwinter Nights Podcast. I'm sitting here with Rachel Ballin, who's the Community Support Manager for Trapdoor Technologies, the developer of Dungeonscape. What can you tell us about Dungeonscape, Rachel?
So Dungeonscape is the official companion to the Dungeons & Dragons tabletop RPG. We're doing digital tools for 5th edition. It will be a fully integrated application available on iOS tablets, Android tablets, and through web browsers that will have features for players, for DMs, for creating adventures, for creating custom content, for managing adventures, tracking adventures, networking with your party, getting together with groups. It will also have fully searchable rules, which is awesome. So I can type in barbarian, and then I can have all of the barbarian stuff pop up, and I could just tap into that article and read whatever I needed to.
Great.
So Gen Con is actually our first big reveal of our new name, which is Dungeonscape. Before this, we were codenamed Morningstar, and we've been in a closed iOS beta for about the last couple weeks, and we have opened up signups for our Android and web version of the beta. We're hoping to get folks into those very soon. They've been incredibly patient so far. So I guess to answer your question, we're going to be rolling out into the Apple App Store first, likely. And if you're familiar at all with the Apple submission process, it can be a real pain in the expletive. It's very cumbersome. So we're hoping to submit very soon, and then depending on the approval and review process with Apple, that could take anywhere from 10 days to 2 weeks. Hopefully we don't have to resubmit. So the idea is to get that into the App Store, get that live, and then have our Android and web beta testers come in as well, similar to what Hearthstone did with their beta rollout. So I don't know if that answered your question. I kind of answered your question? Okay, cool. The idea is to have anything that comes out for 5th edition D&D to be made available immediately in the app. So if a supplement or a new adventure or a new module becomes available, it'll be available to get in the app as well, so digitally. And the way that that's implemented will be depending on whether you're a player or if you're a DM. If you're a DM, you'll download the module, you'll have it on your device, and with the software, if other people at your table have the software as well, you'll be able to send sections of the map to show your players, or share portions of text, or share a character, an NPC portrait, or message your players and pass secret notes through the app. So there's a lot of that kind of functionality. We're going to do a rollout of features. So our most polished feature at this point is the character creation and the character sheet, which links into the PHB through the library. So basically, if I'm rolling up a Dragonborn character, I can tap on Dragonborn at any time, and that'll link me to the PHB section on Dragonborn. So if I, so I'll be able to have in the player's release access to full character creation and fully customizable character sheets, and whatever sections of the player's handbook are involved in those characters. So that's going to be the player's release. The second release will be the DM's release, which will feature our campaign and adventure tab. So that'll be like where the DM can download a campaign or download an adventure, and then he'll be able to, he or she, I should say, will be able to track monsters, add monsters, subtract hit points, track initiative, so track all of the encounter and combat section, as well as pull out map panels that correlate with the adventure text that they're looking at. The campaign is going to be a bigger and more integrated type of adventure. So you'll have the whole overview. You'll be able to tap on Sir Istaval in Daggerford, and you'll get a picture of Sir Istaval, and you'll have all the information about Sir Istaval. And so it really gets into that whole storytelling part of it.
So do you know 5th edition D&D pretty well?
I do now.
Do you know compare it to like third and a half or third?
I personally couldn't, because I am pretty new to D&D myself. But from everything that I've heard, a lot of our team is actually very entrenched in D&D, and our founder, Chris Matney, and managing director now, he's been playing since 1977. So he is an official D&D grognard for sure. So a lot of the design fundamentals and the DM tools come from his background in DMing. And I know from just hearing him talk, he feels like 5th edition, it gets the nostalgia going for the people that have been playing for a really long time, but also they've done a really good job at balancing the approachability of 5th edition. So if I'm a new player, I can pick it up really quickly and have fun. And if I'm an old school player, I'm going to have the nostalgia that I had for maybe 3rd edition or 3.5.
So you mentioned iOS.
Yes.
What other platform is it available for? Is it going to be on
PC? Android tablet and web browsers that are basically most major browsers that can run HTML5 and JavaScript. Yes. Yes. And we'll also have online and offline capabilities. So the full experience of Dungeonscape is definitely the online experience, in that we're all connected via Wi-Fi. And that's the experience of everybody at the table. The DM has his tablet or her tablet, and we have players around the table with tablets, and they can all kind of be interconnected. And that's when I can share my initiative role with my DM. And I can get a note from my DM, or a note from another player, or I can see a map pulled up on my screen, or my DM can give me a dagger and a piece of leather armor that I found.
Yeah, it really sounds like a beautiful blend of the old school tabletop and modern technology.
What we've really tried to do is keep it so that it's easy. Everything is in one place. You will, in theory, never have to reach for a book if you don't want to. But by minimizing all of that time that's spent going through books and looking for rules, you have more time hanging out with your friends and role playing. So that's what we're really, really focused on.
That's great.
But this is not interdimensional. This is not like random.
Yeah.
They do a similar thing, but it's extremely in an electronic sense. What's great about this is a lot of players that want to have the game, don't necessarily need that extremely that can play on Skype or something. Mm-hmm. But with something like this, you don't have to do all the roles, so you get parts of the game.
Mm-hmm. Right.
At the same time, it's what does pass through the actual.
Absolutely. Yes.
Would each player log in?
Yes, so it will be an account-based login. So you'll have your email address and your password. You'll log in, and there you go. And we're really excited to be able to offer something to every type of user that wants to get into the experience. So there will be free content, and the idea behind that is to just, it's kind of a revolutionary thing, and nobody has really been able to integrate all of these pieces into one piece of software. So we want people to be able to give it a try, see if they like it. There'll be enough content for somebody, if they don't ever want to pay for it, for them to get a really nice taste of what we're doing. And then we'll also have we'll have kind of an a la carte feature, like if I just want to get a little section, or I really only want to play a rogue, and I just, that's what I want to do. And I'm never going to do anything else. I'm not a DM, I'm just a player. It's all good. So we'll be able to offer something like that. And we'll also have options for like a bigger bundle of content, or just kind of as you go pieces. And it really does allow for, if you've got a player at your table that loves pen and paper, that's totally fine. It doesn't detract from the experience at all. They just don't get a private note, but the DM then gets to walk over and give them a note, which is exciting on its own, because if everybody else is getting them through the app, but then this one player gets a handwritten note, then it's like, cool. So it's not going to detract from the experience at all, and you could even really just use it as a reference. Like, you could not use it for your character sheet at all. You could just use it as a rules reference that's searchable. Rules.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Theoretically.
Yes.
So, you really should have.
It's really cool. Chris Matney, whenever we play with him, he's a walker, so he likes to move around. And it's so interesting for me. This is definitely my first Gen Con, and as I said, I have not played a lot of D&D. I came from a video game background, but Chris gets to walk around the table. When he's DMing, he just has his iPad right here, and he walks around the table. And so coming to Gen Con and seeing all these DMs barricaded behind their screens and sitting there for 3 or 4 hours, that's the way that it's been done. So this kind of frees you up in multiple different ways.
Yeah, and I'm glad that
it makes a big difference. It brings a lot of legitimacy to what we're doing, and partnering with WotC has been a huge part of us being able to do this in the first place. Yeah. But we are, they're involved in a lot of ways, but everything is designed by us. Everything is programmed, engineered, developed, wireframed, mocked up, color panel. I mean, everything is trapdoor tech. So if I'm your friend and you're my friend and we're all friends through the app, our DM could put us all together in a group. And then I could change my character or change my group or my party, and I could message all of you. Guys, I'm sick tonight, but I still want to know what's going on. So the DM would be able to, one, print that person's character sheet out and have it at the table. Two, have the person just connect up and be available and, hey man, send me your initiative or something. Or they could be on a Google Hangout, and this can hook up to an Apple TV, you can put it onto a television, it'll hook up with a Chromecast, you can put it up on... Yeah. So you can use it with virtual tabletop if you want to. You can use it with a distributed game through Google Hangouts if you wanted to. There's really no limitation to what it can do. It's just about how you want to use it. I think the one thing that we didn't talk about yet is the final release, which will be the Forge release. And that is going to be the creator's release. So that will be where you can create custom content, maps, adventures, text, monsters, traps, treasure, encounters, combats, everything that you want will be able to be created through the Forge. And that's our last piece, that's our last big release for this year. We hope to have all of these releases out by the end of 2014. So we're chucking along here. We're trying to get it all done. So that'll be the last big one for us this year. And we're really excited about that. The Players release will provide a ton of functionality for people right off the bat. But those subsequent releases of the DMs, and especially the Forge, are going to be what really bring everything together and make the app complete. So that the stuff behind the Forge, the details about it, are still being nailed down. But the one thing that I can tell everyone is that if you create a bunch of content with the tool, it's never going to disappear. We're never going to take it away from you. You will always have access to it, even if you never pay for anything else in the app, ever. You'll have access to it. Everything is synced to the cloud, so if I create all of my stuff on my laptop or my desktop, I can just connect my iPad, do a little syncing, and then everything's fine. So I'll have all of that content accessible. We realize that a lot of cons, a lot of local game stores, and even friends' houses don't have Wi-Fi sometimes. So it's really essential to be able to play a full game. Sure, maybe you have to tell your DM what your initiative was, and you have to pass a physical note, or go into the kitchen and tell secrets. But you'll be able to play while you're offline. You'll have access to everything that you've downloaded.
That's very well thought out infrastructure. I mean, the user experience.
Yes.
It's not just the little stuff.
It's the big stuff, and most of that is Chris Matney, because he's been DMing for 35 years. So he's had a lot of time to think about what he wants out of a tool.
Right.
And that's another thing that we're really committed to as a company, Trapdoor Technologies in general, is listening to the feedback of our users. We really are making this for the users. We want to know what people think, how they feel. We've been doing little dev calls with our iOS testers, so we'll have a go-to meeting. You can sign in, you can listen to us talk about what's going on. Because it really makes a difference to hear, like, you can get really in your head about stuff, and I want to be able to change the font size and zoom and pinch and all of this stuff. But we're designing an application. We're designing an experience. So people want to customize everything. You can customize a lot. You can't customize everything. But getting on a call with our users and our potential customers, we can just talk about it. And it's really great for people to hear why we can't implement de-leveling right now and why that's a really challenging thing to do engineering-wise. So everybody, great ideas come from everywhere, but it's really important for us to be able to communicate with our users and our customers about, that's a really great idea, guys, but we might have to do it differently, or here's why we can't do it exactly that way. So keeping an ear and an eye on all of that is going to be really important for us moving forward. We're on Twitter and Facebook and Google Plus, and we're going to have community forums and all kinds of stuff.
We'll post all that detail on the show.
Awesome. We really want to be able to have... So I should reiterate that this is specifically for 5th edition D&D right now. We've had a lot of interest in, okay, well, when can I have my homebrew rules, and when can we have a zombie and vampire campaign and that kind of stuff. So obviously all of that content would have to be programmed into the application. So the answer is we really want that for the future. We're also in partnership with Wizards of the Coast, so we just kind of have to see how we go. But we would love to have some kind of vibrant, community-driven and submitted marketplace of adventures that you can download to the app. You can play a Cylon versus human adventure. You can go do zombies. You can do whatever pirates you want. So we've got a lot of things on the wish list. We've got a lot of ideas. We're going to be really busy. The great thing about the technology behind Dungeonscape, which is the Story Machine, which is Trapdoor Technologies' flagship product, and the wizard behind the big mask.
It sounds like a really comprehensive product with a lot of thought that's gone into this, and it sounds amazing. I want to play it now.
Well, we are doing play adventures with the app here at Gen Con. So if you have a ticket to do any of the D&D adventures, you can come by and tell your marshal that you want to use the Dungeonscape app, and we would love to show it to you. Or we'll just show it to you anyway. I mean, you can sit down with one of us, and we'll let you play through, roll up a character, see how it looks, see how it works. We're here.
Thank you very much, Rachel.
Absolutely.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of the Realms of Trinity, who are solely responsible for its contents.
For now, I say we crack some of those kegs and drown the flagon in wine.